Drive Time on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Zurich. For pensions, protection, savings and investments. At Zurich, we deal in peace of mind.
Now, after the rapid overthrow of the brutal Assad regime in Syria, attention is now turning to what the new government will look like. One of the rebel leaders who helped bring down the previous regime, Mohammed al-Bashir, has been appointed Syria's interim prime minister. The fate of former regime officials is also in the balance, as the main Islamist rebel group HTS stated today that authorities will list former regime officials who oversaw torture under Assad's rule. For some reflection on what has just happened in Syria, I'm joined by journalist and broadcaster John Simpson, presenter of Unspun World on BBC Two. John, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you. Nice to talk to you.
I know you first interviewed Bashar al-Assad nearly 20 years ago, John. What was your impression of the man then?
Oh, well, I mean, a weak man, a man who seemed anxious to please, very, very unusual from compared with all the other dictators that I've met and interviewed over the years, been quite a few of them. You know, they're usually people with a strong self-image, a sense of their own rightness and cleverness, usually brutal, usually rather threatening. They don't like you to ask them difficult questions. And Bashir al-Assad was the exact opposite, almost apologetic. You know, he was a former eye specialist, an ophthalmologist in North London. And somehow or another, you could never sort of shake off that sense that he wanted to be friends.
Yeah, and I've heard that. I've heard him, John, being described as meek in public, along the lines that you're describing, but essentially a butcher.
Well, essentially a man who was in charge of butchers and who never did anything to stop the butchery, as far as we know.
And probably orchestrated, you know, most likely orchestrated the slaughter of people, tens of thousands of them, secretly taking them.
Who knows? You're saying that. I mean, I've got no idea whether that's true or not. I imagine that, judging from my experience in Syria, that what happened was he was just the front man who ordered around by Russians, by some members of his own family, much nastier members.
Well, John, far be it from me to take issue with a broadcaster as experienced and as imminent as you, but it seems to me that if that type of slaughter is happening on his watch and that torture is happening on his watch, and you have the means to leave the country and go somewhere else, you would do so. It seems to me that he was in charge of the country, in charge of the butchers, and probably, without question, really orchestrated it.
Well, you're entitled to your opinion.
You disagree.
I just think he was the front man, the man that that ticked the boxes, the man that signed the laws, the man that kind of was told what to do. I don't think he was the man that told others what to do. Mm. That is no defense when he, I think he may well eventually turn up at the International Criminal Court or some other tribunal. It's no defense whatsoever to say, well, I just did what I was told. Mm. But, you know, I mean, we can. There's always a great temptation to, you know, to put everybody in the, what shall we say, the Saddam Hussein category, the man that really did orchestrate all the things that that al-Bashir's
Bashar al-Assad,
Bashar al-Assad, that's the guy we're talking about.
But can I just say, John, even the use of chemical weapons against his own people and the defence of that, those operations, I mean, he seems to me to be a vile, evil man.
Well, I'm sure, I mean, of course you've got to be pretty vile to go along with all that sort of stuff. Of course you have. And of course it's a huge personal weakness. But, you know, to want and just simply to want to make somebody an appalling, evil dictator when they're actually, I think, a weak front man is, well, you can do it, but I'm not sure how much light that sheds, really.
Okay. We'll agree to disagree, as I say, on that one. What do you think is going to happen now, though?
Well, I've never covered a violent revolution which didn't take years before it kind of settled down and before peace arrived. In fact, I was just thinking about the only revolution I can remember, which was entirely peaceful in its aftermath as well as beforehand, was the one in what is now the Czech Republic and Slovakia, then Czechoslovakia. Mostly the fact of overthrowing a former government by violence is something which begets more violence as time goes on. I have to say this is a really, really good start. Al Jolani, the man who oversaw the revolution, who led the revolution, led his troops into Damascus. He is talking about governing in the interests of all the people, with all the factions that he can manage to get on board. That is a very useful kind of approach.
And they'll have to get it right. Yeah, they'll have to get it right, won't they? Because I know they're very different countries, but it just, for some reason, Afghanistan came to mind, and Hamid Karzai.
Yeah, you should forget Afghanistan. It's got nothing to do with Syria,
I know. But the point I'm making is that when Hamid Karzai came to power there, that he struggled, I think it was the mid-noughties, to command the respect of the various tribal leaders and the various sects. Now, in term, the comparison is this, that there are different sections of society or different tribes in Syria who will have to have the respect of any new leader or government.
Yeah, no, that's entirely true. But there is, I promise you, and I know both countries really well, it's as different as talking about Ireland and South Africa to talk about Afghanistan. It's no model whatever for Syria, a much more sophisticated country with far more divisions and complexes than Afghanistan. I think every country is different anyway and shouldn't be likened to others, but I don't think that Afghanistan is a terribly useful example, really.
How do you think, will there have to be an outside influence in terms of getting the country back up and running and bolstering, even from afar, whatever new government they come up with?
Absolutely. I mean, I can't see how they can possibly get any kind of really kind of equilibrium going in Syria without a lot of help from perhaps the Gulf region. Turkey is going to want to play a big part and may have to pay up in order to do that. You know, there's the Western countries, I think, will be glad if they could put money into a stable country, a stable government in Syria, but they've got to do it. You know, there is a temptation, you can already see this when you read the statements, both of Western leaders, but also of Gulf leaders, to say, well, let's just wait and see before we do anything to help. No doubt that's a wise decision. But while they're waiting and the money isn't there, it's going to be much more difficult for Al Jolani to establish a system which is going to be successful.
Well, that's for sure. That's for sure, because you need resources to do that type of thing. Can I get your opinion, John, on some of the accusations made by Turkey and some Middle Eastern countries? They're accusing Israel of exploiting the downfall of Assad and incursions beyond the buffer zone.
Yeah, well, they're clearly doing that. I mean, they're clearly taking advantage of the lack of any kind of proper military control in Syria to get rid of, for instance, the chemical weapons factories and depositories in various parts of the country, just to make sure that, you know, if things turn nasty, then a new regime won't be able to use those kind of weapons. And the Israelis clearly are wanting to firm up the Golan Heights positions that they have. I noticed that my colleagues at the BBC have just verified a photograph, a kind of selfie, really, taken by one soldier of another of the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force, and they've isolated where it was taken, and it was certainly taken well to the north of Syrian positions in the Golan, of Israeli positions in the Golan Heights. So yes, they're moving in, and of course that's angering lots and lots of countries who feel that that Israel's involvement is something less than benign.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you finally about Bashar al-Assad? Is he in Russia? Do you think he'll stay there? What do you think will happen to him?
Well, I think, no, I'm sure he's in Russia, and I'm sure his family are there. Well, while Vladimir Putin is in power, certainly nothing will happen to al-Assad. I mean, he'll just live a quiet... He's stolen so much money from the country that he can live in comfort for the rest of his days. But, you know, my memory goes back, for instance, to what happened in Serbia after the fall of Slobodan Milosevic, the man that destroyed the whole of the former Yugoslavia. Nobody ever thought that Milosevic might stand trial for what he'd done. But the new government came in. It wanted better relations with the West. It joined up with the agreement that set up the International Criminal Court. And I was able to sit there and listen to him and to Karadzic and to Mladic's trials. And all of them found guilty. My feeling is that when Putin goes, a regime may come in Russia which wants to have peace with the West and wants to have a settlement. And that then one easy way of doing that is to say, OK, you want to try al-Assad? Here he is.
Well, only time will tell, as they say. John Simpson of the BBC, thank you very much indeed for joining us.